From Learfield on the Vermont Sports Network, this is the Cat's Den. Now, here is your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? We are here. We are in the Cat's Den, Champlain Valley game night on a Tuesday. We do this every Tuesday at 6 o'clock, UVM and UVM Athletics. We talk all about it. We break down the Cats and all the fields of play. Today, short show, though. We go up until 6:30, and then there's Bruins hockey. Bruins taking on the Calgary Flames. So what we're going to do is in a couple of minutes, we're going to go to a quick break here momentarily, and then we're going to be joined by Patrick Weaver. Patrick Weaver is the head Nordic skiing coach at UVM, and the reason why we bring him on is because, look, I am not a skier. I plead my naivete when it comes to skiing. So I've been watching the Olympics every night, and a lot of what I'm watching in skiing, I have very little idea about what I'm watching. So I have assembled some skiing for dummies questions. I have assembled some higher level skiing questions for the people who really do know what they're talking about. I don't want to insult their intelligence. So we'll do a mix of that. Other things to note as far as UVM goes, they'll take on New Hampshire on Thursday, 6:30 from Patrick Jim. We'll have the coverage for you starting then with the pregame show. Catamounts have won 14 in a row in men's basketball. And just what an unbelievable run it's been. And as we start to move towards playoff time, I'm starting to get excited about the idea of maybe Anthony Lamb coming back also. Look, I have no knowledge if he'll be back and ready to go, but I think it's likely. December 27th, Anthony Lamb gets hurt. We hear 6 to 8 weeks with a broken foot. 8 full weeks would be February 27th. That would be 2 weeks from now. So if you're telling me 8 weeks is the long range of this injury, February 27th, if we're thinking about America East Tournament, we're thinking about NCAA Tournament, I think Anthony Lamb could be back. But what the challenge would be for the coaching staff, if he was able to come back, and now I'm getting ahead of myself, would be how much does he play? Does he start? Does he play 4 minutes a game, 14 minutes a game, or 40 minutes a game? I mean, what can you expect from him, and how much has been accomplished in his absence that you don't want to mess with? I think about this the same way I think about the Celtics. I'm all pumped because I think Gordon Hayward might come back. No, I'm not saying the team is better without Gordon Hayward. We know they're not. We know UVM is not better without Anthony Lamb. How could you be better with arguably one of the top two players in the entire league? But the team chemistry, the team dynamic has changed in his absence. Team defense has gotten better in his absence. Maybe, again, not because Anthony Lamb is a bad defender, but because the team knows without him there, they need to be more focused on defense because they can't just go out and score 88 points at will. Treyvell Haynes has been scoring a lot of offense. How much does he have to sacrifice to get Anthony Lamb in? These are all questions you would have to wonder about, and I wonder the same thing when it comes to the Celtics and when it comes time for Gordon Hayward to potentially come back. Guys have figured out new roles in these guys' absence. That's very, very challenging for coaching staffs to try to figure out, especially when you have players that are that high level, that they're that impact, and they know that, and they want to come out and contribute. It's tough. Again, 4 minutes a game, 14 minutes a game, start, off the bench, crunch time, all those questions would remain to be seen. But for now, the biggest thing is just trying to get Anthony Lamb to a point where he's healthy enough to play. Again, 8 weeks from his injury would be February 27th, and that would be right before the end of the America East regular season. Champlain Valley game night continues on. When we come back, we'll get more into skiing. Patrick Weaver, UVM Nordic head coach. You can always get in 802-655-6672. We'll see you on the other side of the break. 101.3. Yeah. It's 26 degrees at 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley game night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night inside the Cat's Den right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Short show going up until 6:30, and then we bring you Bruins hockey. They're taking on Calgary. The Flames come to Boston. Let's go out now to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. We're going to find ourselves a special guest. It's Patrick Weaver. He's the head Nordic skiing coach at UVM. And the reason why I wanted to have Patrick on is because, number one, talk about the success of his team, but number two, the Winter Olympics are going on, and I'm watching it every single night like I'm sure a lot of you are, and I'll be perfectly honest, I am not understanding every single thing that I see every night. So to try to better our understanding of the world of skiing and some of these other winter sports related to skiing, we bring on Patrick Weaver. Patrick, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Good.
Patrick, I've never skied a day in my life, so I don't understand. As I said, I don't understand everything that I'm seeing. So I have put together a list of some very rudimentary questions about skiing. I've also put together some what I think are higher level questions that some of our audience who knows a lot about skiing will appreciate as well. But I'll start with one of the most basic ones. Tell us the difference between alpine and Nordic skiing.
Alpine, first off, you need to take a lift up to the top, and then you get to ski as fast as you can down through a bunch of gates. Nordic, you get no lift. You start at point A and go into the woods and come back and finish at point B, which is usually the same place as point A. And it's a little, I would say, a lot more work for Nordic skiing.
You guys at UVM are fortunate to have a couple Olympians from your current roster competing in Pyeongchang, including Lauren St. Germain. She's going to compete tonight for Canada in prime time, so we're excited to watch that. The Olympics deals with amateur athletes. The NCAA deals with amateur athletes, but sometimes there's some crossover where there's a lot of Olympians who are making a lot of money. How are you guys able to have Olympians who are also NCAA athletes?
Well, I mean, a lot of the athletes are still technically amateurs. Just because they're going to the Olympics doesn't mean they're making a lot of money. They're probably making no money, actually. We do have, you know, one of our alpine skiers who's skiing for Canada, but, you know, she's also a student here. Again, you know, she gets supported by the national team up there, but by no means is she making any money doing it. To be an NCAA skier, you still have to preserve your eligibility, and that means make no money.
How many of the disciplines that we see in the Olympics are also in college skiing? I mean, we're seeing slopestyle and we're seeing moguls. How many of those things exist in your college world?
NCAA only supports Nordic skiing and alpine skiing. Alpine skiing would just be the slalom and the GS. You notice in alpine skiing, they also have a downhill event. NCAA does not support the downhill event. It's just a slalom and just the GS events.
Now, you guys have won a national championship at UVM. You did so back in 2012. What goes into winning a team NCAA championship? Is it men's scores combined with women's scores? Is it men and women separate? How does that work?
It's everyone. So it's men and women Nordic, and it's men and women alpine. So you have to have a combination of things. One, you have to have a good bunch of athletes, but two, you have to have a lot of luck too. There's so much that can happen in any of those events, and basically everything's got to go right. And there's a reason why one team doesn't win all the time. Even if you have all the best athletes, you still have to have everything go right during those four events. Actually, eight events with the men and women. So it's a unique situation with all those different events and genders and sports.
Patrick Weaver, UVM skiing, with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night inside the Cat's Den. He's the head Nordic coach. I know it's not an NCAA event, as you just told me, but I'm watching the moguls and I'm wondering how everybody who does moguls does not have shredded kneecaps.
Yeah, I ask myself that too every time I watch it. That looks incredibly painful, and I can't assume that's a lifelong sport.
Yeah. What is the prototypical, Patrick, what's the prototypical body type for a championship-level skier? Like, is it better to be short? Is it better to be tall? What's the prototypical frame for someone who's really good at skiing?
Well, on the Nordic side, they come all sizes. You know, we have, you know, people that are 5 feet tall and people that are 6'2", maybe even taller. Basically for Nordic skiing, it's what you have for an engine, what you have for lungs, and how hard you can push yourself. For alpine skiing, they tend to be a little bit bigger. They have to have a tremendous amount of strength to handle the speed going down that hill. But again, you know, they come all different sizes too.
It seems like about 20 years ago, snowboarding started to get really, really popular. Has snowboarding impacted skiing? Are more people going into snowboarding and choosing a different path other than skiing? Or are you not really seeing an effect?
From the Nordic side, I'm the Nordic side. You know, we don't really see too much of an impact. I really don't know for the alpine side. You know, I know a lot of the hills when snowboarding first came out, didn't allow snowboarding on the slopes. As far as you know, how much talent is going to snowboarding versus alpine, you know, I really have no idea. I couldn't answer that.
Now, you talk about Nordic being physically demanding and what it takes for lung capacity. I think the same thing. I'm watching biathlon, which is cross-country skiing with shooting. From just the skiing standpoint, how unbelievably difficult is cross-country skiing?
Very. It's probably one of the toughest sports you can do as far as the amount of pain that you put yourself through. You watch those skiers out there, you know, biathletes and cross-country, they're putting themselves into a tremendous amount of pain. Just they've got the gas pedal and they go as hard as they can go until the finish line comes. When you got to carry a rifle on your back and you got to slow down and control your heart rate and try to hit those little targets, it's got to be one of the highest pressure sports. You know, given that you miss a couple targets, you're off the back pretty quick. So biathlon is a pretty unique sport, both physically and mentally.
Patrick, we've heard, look, there have been a couple of skiing events already canceled at the Olympics, and the reason why is wind at the top of the mountain. What is the impact of wind, and why do these events have to get canceled?
Well, I mean, if it's too windy, it's just too dangerous. It's, if it's snowing a little bit and you get some squalls, you got to have some pretty good visibility, especially for those alpine skiers, the speed that they're going. There is a large amount of safety behind you know, providing a safe course for the athletes with the speeds that they go.
Another thing that I've wondered, and I've seen it in snowboarding and we've seen it in skiing, that there are a number of really, really young athletes that are in medal contention, whether it's Red Girard in snowboarding, 17 years old, Chloe Kim in snowboarding, 17 years old, or Michaela Schifrin, 22 years old, who could win 5 gold medals in this Olympics. Most sports is, you got to put in your dues, you got to build up, you're not going to be at your peak until you're 27, 30 years old. Why are these skiing and snowboarding disciplines conducive to younger athletes being so successful?
Well, I think, you know, a little, you know, probably more on the snowboarding side than even the alpine side. You know, there's a lot of alpine skiers that, you know, do ski, you know, up until their 30s. But those, you know, the snowboarding, it, you know, it's a lot of fast twitch muscles, and it's basically, you know, some of those tricks that they do, like, you don't really want to think too much about what you're doing because you're getting some pretty high air, and you know, there's a lot of impact on your joints when they land. So, you know, I think it's, you know, that type of sport, it's more for the young, especially the, you know, the slope slide and the, when you get old, you're probably smarting up a little bit and don't want to be doing those things, but, yeah.
How impressed are you with someone like Michaela Schifrin, 22 years old, again, could win 5 gold medals? She could be the age, you know, she's the age of people on your team. So how amazing is it to see someone who's that good at that age?
It's incredibly amazing. You know, you watch her ski and the way she takes control of the, you know, the hill, you know, at that age too, to be so dominant. It's crazy to think, actually, you know, it's you know, she, like you say, she's only 22 and, you know, she stays injury free for another, you know, 10 years. It's, you know, she could really rack up some wins over the years.
What's the path for somebody to become a great skier? You know, we always hear about, you know, the parents who have given up everything, and, you know, LeVar Ball, we hear about him in basketball. You hear about the parents who pour all their money into their kids' hockey or baseball career. How does somebody get really good at skiing?
Yeah, I, with skiing, and I think it probably goes across the board, I think it's starting young and just becoming a natural on your skis. You know, it takes some pretty high skill levels to, one, to be able to go that fast. You know, and then even on Nordic skis, you know, just to be natural on your skis and starting young, and I think you got to keep it fun too. You know, it's if you want to make it a lifetime sport, you know, it can't just all about the competition, and you know, it's you still got to work hard, but it's got to be fun, and you got to compete against, you know, good people. So I wouldn't say you have to dedicate your life to it, you know, early on, but just being on skis and having fun with it is going to help you when you start competing, you know, in your teens.
Am I too old to start skiing? I feel like I live here. I feel like I'm missing out on half the recreational opportunities. Am I too old at 28 to start?
No, not at all. Yeah, no, you got a chance. I'm not going to put money on you making an Olympic team.
Yeah.
you still have plenty of time to enjoy the slopes, or if you want to start mellow, I would suggest maybe some Nordic skiing on the flat grounds and work your way up from there. But no, not at all too old.
What's the feeling like when you're about to take a run, being up there at the top of the mountain or up there in the woods with a lot of that fresh air? That, like, from a nostalgia standpoint, it seems worthwhile taking up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what else are you going to do in the winter? I mean, so many people complain about the winter and how cold it is and how much snow there is. I mean, go out and enjoy it. You'll end up enjoying the winter once you get an activity that you like doing.
Patrick, we'll get you out of here on this. Tell us a little bit about your team. Again, national championship in 2012, always in the mix for one. Tell us about your guys' team this year.
Yeah, we're rebuilding year. Not really rebuilding, but we have a young team, so that's really exciting. On the Nordic side, we have six sophomores. They were all freshmen last year. They made some huge improvements, from last year to this year, which is really exciting to see. We also have some really talented seniors on the team. Kelly Brown on the men's side, Elena Sonnison on the women's side. Elena's been winning most of the races in the East, so that's really great to see. So that's on the Alpine side too. We have a lot of good talent. Again, on the younger side, and I definitely say this is a team for the future. But watch out for us this year too.
Patrick, we appreciate the time, man. Thanks for clearing up a lot of the questions. Best of luck the rest of the season to you and the Cats, and we'll talk to you again.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Appreciate it. There he goes, Patrick Weaver. Well, a lot of my basic knowledge is now covered, and I'll continue to watch the Olympics and just try to keep piecing it all together. But Patrick definitely helped. I don't know if I could get into it. I don't know. It's not that I wouldn't think it's fun. I certainly would think it's fun. It's not that I'd be too scared of trying it. I'd be too afraid of breaking bones because I got other things I like to do. Pick up basketball, playing baseball in the summer. I can't afford to be on the shelf for 4 months. So I don't know. We'll have to see if I get into it. I know Rich is listening on his way to Virgin's thinking, you got to do it. You got to do it. It's the best feeling in the world. If you want to listen to Rich, 92.1 VTK, our sister station, he's got Virgin's and Milton High School basketball. Thanks to Patrick for joining us. Thanks to Jeff Idelson for joining us in the huddle. Thanks to Tom Caron for joining us. You can visit the website, as always, tomorrow, Buster Olney. We'll talk more Red Sox spring training, biggest questions for the Sox going into this spring in Fort Myers. We got all kinds of stuff to get to, and we'll talk to Josh Sims out in Charlotte. He'll talk about the Giants' new offensive coordinator, Mike Shula. All that and more tomorrow. Bruins hockey next, 101.3 ESPN.